Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 599. It's the last day of September, the 30th, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Greg Coleman, CEO of Independent Resources, IRG, covers the highlights from the interim results. Plus, Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala Limited, that's OBT, goes through the interim results and strategy going forward. I also have Nicola Duke, being a Friday. A technical analyst looks at the following charts. Deutsche Bank. Ooh. Seeing Machines. Sinclair Pharma. Capita. ASA Resources and Management Resource Solutions. Plus, of course, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. It's a measure of money flow on the AIM list there. And there's a couple of surprise entries here in the top two places. In fact, and number four. You can also see the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website over the last 7 days. The website, that's voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Plus, I cover the most liked RNS on the website this morning. And today's suggested one for your watch list is by Paul, and it's Frontier Development, FDEV. I'll give out the reasons why Paul reckons this company should be added to your watch list in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Coleman, CEO of Independent Resources. That's ticker IRG. How are you, Greg?
I'm great this morning, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, and you've just had your interims out. We'll go through a couple of those points, the highlights you want to drag out from that in a bit. But first and foremost, for people new to the podcast or haven't heard of IRG, can you give us a brief roundup as to what you're all about, please, there, Greg?
Yeah, the company's Independent Resources. We have a very experienced asset management team. We're focused on North Africa, finding, developing, and producing oil and gas assets. Right now, we're focused on Egypt and Tunisia. There's lots of opportunities there. We think we're right in the middle of it. There's plenty of upside to be delivered. And now's a good time. Oil prices are low, but look like they're stabilizing and might start creeping up a bit. So it's a good time to be a buyer.
Yeah, well, the oil price jumped nearly 6% the other day as apparently they reached an agreement for the OPEC agreement deal, to sort of freeze supplies. They're reducing it, I think, by 700,000 barrels a day, they're saying. I don't know if it'll hold, but today the Venezuelan president came out and said even non-OPEC countries like Russia may join in the freeze there. Well, I'll wait to see that, because we've seen before in past, you know, agreements that even OPEC countries haven't agreed or haven't stuck to the agreement, have they?
No, they find it very difficult. There's so many pressures on the countries. There's social pressures, and they need revenue, and everyone's fighting for every last dollar. So, you know, we wait and see. But we run our business on the basis of today's prices and a small range around them is what we should expect for the future.
Yeah.
And let's not get too excited about some big uptick in prices, because there's always factors that we just cannot anticipate. Political factors, OPEC agreements, and, you know, there's all sorts of things like that. So we run our business on a very conservative view, and if we get some upside, great, and if the price of oil goes down a bit or quite a bit, we can still respond to that too.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, they've just pretty much dropped your interim results. I've not really read through them, so can you pick out some of the highlights there, Greg, from your interims?
Well, the most important thing, I think, for everybody is that we're continuing to make progress on getting registered in Egypt. That will allow us to start receiving revenues from when we acquired our East Ghazalat interest last July 1st, 2015. The revenues from that acquisition still accrue and are sitting with EGPC awaiting our final registration. I was just in Egypt this past week in Cairo and met with the authorities, who are very supportive of our ongoing involvement. And so I'm encouraged. What I can't say is exactly when that will be received. And because of our issues with the operator, I'm not exactly sure what they've been doing in terms of making sure that they get paid. But as you can imagine, everybody's anxious to make this process as seamless as possible so that payments can arrive when they're due.
Yeah, and like I said, you've been accruing now payments or revenue from the 1st of July. So do you know, obviously, a rough ballpark figure. How much is that?
I think that we're due our share roughly $1 million from last July. That's reflecting oil prices that we know about, including a very low price that we were experiencing in January, February, March of this year. So that's a big sum of money for us, and I'm hopeful that it will start to arrive once the registration process is complete, but I don't think anyone should expect it's going to arrive all at once.
Yeah, we all know
the country's in financial trouble, but frankly, to incentivize further investment, they need to make sure we get some revenue. They can't expect us to keep funding the country. We're too small for that, and we have big plans for this asset and the other things that we're trying to buy, and they know that they can't expect us to subsidize the state.
Yeah, well, just to put that in context, I mean, your market cap at the moment is about 1.2 so million, so in revenues of a million, quite substantial. All right, so also, I mean, with the interims out, I mean, apart from that, there's some two other bits of news out recently, and of course, settlement of the loan note with Transglobe there, because that seemed like quite a good deal and pushed your share price up a bit, didn't it?
Well, it did. It's. I think this demonstrates the kind of conversation we've been having with Transglobe. They're a pretty good company, very professional, and they understood our issues. We understood them, and we both decided it was better for us to move on and focus on the asset rather than trying to sort out who owed what to whom and what the past issues were. So I'm very pleased. I think we had a very grown-up discussion with Transglobe. It's good for us. I hope it's good for them because it puts the past in the past for them. And it's a sum of money, it's important money for us, but our shareholders believe, obviously, based on the reaction in the market, that this was a good deal for the company. And yeah, we think it was too, because we have many issues to sort out, and the fewer of them, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, I mean, the loan was for $2.5 million US, and it's been pretty much settled, is this right, for $200,000?
Yes, it's been settled. We've paid our money over to them, we and Nostra Terra, and so that's behind us. What we had to give up in return was we had a potential indemnity claim that we could have made if we found something that had not really been addressed in any of the agreements we had, of up to $1 million, and so we had to forego that. And the main area where we might have had a claim, and we don't have one at the time, was maybe in the environmental arena. I don't know if we'd found some past environmental damage that hadn't been disclosed, but we've been out to the site. That doesn't look like there's anything like that. And the other thing where, you know, we had an ongoing discussion with them is the nature of the accounting, of the way that the asset was being accounted for by the operator, mainly, I have to say, not Transglobe. And whether we would ever have been able to win an indemnity claim, we felt, let's just put this all behind us and let's move on.
Yeah. Okay. And just before the interims came out, there, your shareholder loan and related party transaction there with Brandon Hill, and that will help you through short-term funding, won't it?
It certainly does. I mean, we've been very pleased with the support we've had from Brandon Hill and the investors that they've brought into our company over the past year. They're a top-notch firm, and the CEO has been very helpful at guiding us, and we have a very good relationship with them. But at the same time, we need to deliver. We can't carry on expecting new funds all the time. We need to start standing on our own 2 feet. And so, I think their expectations are very clear, and our aspirations and our plans are also very clear. We just need to deliver them.
Okay. So apart from the bits of news we just covered there, are there any other bits of information in the interim report that you'd like to sort of point out to people?
Well, I think we've had a renewed interest in the farm in Zar Hadada, our Tunisian license, and we're working with a couple of firms now on some due diligence, so I'm pleased with that. I think that's a new development. I guess people are a bit more optimistic than they've been in the past. Mm-hmm. Time is short, though. We have until next August to deliver a discovery. We're very excited about the potential on this license. I have to say, we have spent the last year and a half since we've become the operator to re-examine the prospectivity of the license, and we've refocused our efforts on something that's more conventional than what we'd been looking at the previous 10 years when the current management team had not been involved. And it's much more conventional, much easier to produce, much less risky with some proper technical work. And I think that's what new farm-in partners are looking at. And what we're looking from them for is technology, obviously capital, but a cooperative partner. And I think that's where we're going to end up, but we need to press on.
Yeah, okay. And so, I mean, you said you have new interest there. I mean, will we see news, in the short term on this, or is it still ongoing?
Well, I think the time frame is several weeks, I'd say several weeks before we'd be able to announce something. Certainly by the end of the year, if we don't have an announcement, then we'll have to come up with a plan B.
Okay. All right. Marvellous, Greg. Well, is there anything else you want to point out, or should we go for the 3 points?
I think the last thing I'd just like to say, I'd like to thank all of our the people we've been working with over the past year. We've had to restructure some of our payables, and several people have agreed to take equity rather than cash, which we really appreciate their help. I mean, this is not an easy thing for people to do because, as we all know, business is very tough right now. But I think it's a demonstration that, you know, we have a good relationship with our suppliers and our partners and contractors that work with us. And so I'd really like to thank them for what they've done and their faith in the company.
Okay, good stuff. All right, well, Greg, listen, if someone hits the follow button on your page on Vox, what will happen is they'll get RNSs delivered straight to the front screen of their smartphone. And so if you could, give us 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button, please.
Well, I think there's a lot of upside in our stock. The management believe in this company. We've taken our past salaries in equity. We believe that that equity will be worth a lot of money in the future. We have news coming up in the next few months, starting with our receivables in Egypt and getting registered and starting to receive revenue there. The farm in Tunisia has got huge potential for this company if it comes through. And we have other business development opportunities where we have offers pending right now, which are going to continue to build the company. And we think, you know, give us a few years and we will have a leading oil and gas company focused on North Africa, and our shareholders will do extremely well in that.
Excellent, Greg. Thanks for chatting to me, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
I hope so too, Justin. Thanks very much. Bye now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Miles Pelham, Chairman of Optala Limited. That's OBT ticker. Miles, thank you for coming back on.
My pleasure.
Excellent, sir. Well, listen, you've had 2 bits of news out today. You've had your half-yearly report and your quarterly business update. But before we go into some questions about that and the highlights you want to pull out of that, can you tell us exactly what Optala does for new listeners and for people not aware of Optala, please?
Sure. Optala Limited is a name-listed company focusing on agricultural and forestry. We have operations in Tanzania and Mozambique. In Tanzania, we have around 1,800 hectares of arable farmland that has had around $10 million of investment over the past 4 or 5 years. In Mozambique, we hold quite a large amount of exotic hardwood 50-year concessions. So that's around 312,000 hectares, which is about 40 times the size of Hong Kong Island. So we were listed in 2018 and have been through various asset phases, and we remain with just two asset streams. And we've spent the vast majority of this year trying to get those into production, into sustainable production. And obviously pleased today to announce that we have achieved that with the agriculture starting to harvest around now, and the forestry having shipping wood in September.
Okay, so you've got the announcements out today, half yearly report and the quarter there, and I'm looking there, and you've sort of swung from profit to loss, but you seem to be quite optimistic. Now, how does that work?
Yes, the reality is that the results out today were from a period where the agri and the forestry are traditionally quite slow due to the rainy season. We were also in heavy retrenchment from the Lesotho shops. We're hemorrhaging cash, so we were pulling back from that business, which you would have seen announced a week or so ago. We sold. So yes, it's acknowledged that this isn't a stellar performance, but that's why I'm chairman. I took over at the end of April, and we have been very aggressively restructuring since then. So as I said, the shops are gone, and we've staunched the bleed there. The forestry is in production, and the agri is just right now entering into production. So the future is much brighter, and there's very good reason to be positive.
So you, excuse the pun, you sort of chopped away a bit of dead wood there. Is that correct, essentially? And going forward, you know.
Yes, I mean, you could say that. I mean, it was very quickly deemed when I took over as a non-core asset. it was loss making. It was chewing up a lot of cash. So of course you don't sell a business for $100 if you think it's going to be accretive. It's great to have management focused solely on the agri and the forestry. It's only been a week and a half, but certainly it's much nicer to be able to dig right down into the detail of each of these businesses.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm just looking here. Your mission statement, your new one, is it to become one of East Africa's largest sustainable food and timber producers. That's quite a lofty ambition. Now, you know, will you need to become, you know, acquisitive to you know, get to that target? And, you know, it's nice putting those targets up there, but obviously you see this as very achievable, do you?
It's certainly a long-term statement, given our size at the moment. But you certainly can't rule out that we are going to need to possibly acquire to reach our ambitions. But certainly that's not the focus of the board at the moment. We need to get our own asset base into full production before we turn hunter and start looking for others. And to be honest, we need to get ourselves out of the prey basket before we go on the prowl. I think when I took over, we were trading around 10% valuation to our assets. Today, with the move, I think it's 25% or smaller above that. But we're still in a dangerous place and bite-sized. And the only way we are going to get out of that is to continue to monetize the assets, both through inward investment and also by getting these assets into full production and accretive. And we have we have a way to go, but we're fully focused on that.
Yeah. So, what are the? I mean, off the top of your head, there, I'm asking you. What are the value of your assets at the moment, and the value of your company at the moment?
So, the assets on balance sheet are £120 million.
Yeah.
And I believe the market cap. The stock's up a little bit today, but the market cap is £34 million, and it's. There are many AIM companies trading at a discount to their assets. The real change is when you have ability to monetize those, and we've shown that through the forestry investment we can monetize our forestry assets, and through the agriculture we need to get it into full production, which is just starting now. And of course, throughout 2017, we hope to scale that up multiple times.
Okay, all right. So you plan now to convert your. Is it Meridel investment structure into a 5.7% equity stake in your forestry division? Now, what does that mean, and what does it mean going forwards?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the Meridel structure was quite opaque, being an SPV, and it wasn't necessarily clear to investors what it meant. Were we selling our best parts of the business? When did the profits flow in, and what were our liabilities on it? And I feel that moving the Meridel structure, or converting the Meridel structure into a preference share, very clearly illustrates and is transparent about what valuation investors over here in the Far East and also the other investors from around the world that we had invest place on an asset such as timber. Timber is its own investment class in itself. So it's I feel that it's quite a significant part of the announcement today that even during our darkest times, when we were 6 months ago retrenching heavily from the shops, and we weren't yet in full production, or even in minor production in both of the asset streams, that investors were prepared to invest in the forestry business and put a valuation with their investments of $4.6 million, put a valuation on the forestry business of $80 million, and that's quite significant for a company with a market cap like ours. So and illustrates the value that's inherent there. Now, of course, the price is likely to go up now, so any future investment that we have in should also lead to us monetizing those assets. I mean, if we did it another 20 times, of course, you'd understand what cash we would have in the bank, but the intention is not to do that. The intention is to just raise enough money that we need to get the forestry business pumping on all cylinders and really start pushing out a lot of cash that we can use to expand other places in the business, or maybe look at other businesses that would be accretive to our suite.
Yeah. So at the moment you say both businesses are exceeding expectations, but the global economy seems to be in a downturn. I think it was the World Trade Organization this week slashed world trade from a forecast of 2.8% to 1.7%, a third, a reduction there. So what's the reality on the ground there where you are?
The reality on the ground in the local markets is still not bad, I would say. Yeah. We produce food and timber, which are both very basic resources. We're not in the high value products just yet. But in terms of the demand we're seeing from global trading partners, it's still very, very strong. We're seeing good demand from the Middle East, which is where we've always planned to focus our efforts on selling fresh produce for our food, and we feel they could take more than we could ever produce, and that's true with the forestry as well. I mean, we've put some hard numbers in the announcement that we have around 5,000 cubic meters of demand for wood, but we can only produce 400 cubic meters per month at the moment. So clearly, we're not seeing any downturn, but of course we're not immune to a global downturn. And as a global trading platform, we're exposed.
Yeah, but like you said, there's demand there, and basically demand is way above what you can produce at. So that's a good sign, I suppose. So, Miles, I mean, if anyone needs any more convincing as to why they should, you know, look into you and research about Optala, can you give us three reasons as to why an investor should hit the follow button on your Vox Markets page, please?
Sure. Well, we're committed to being a sustainable, ethical company. We're part of the Social Stock Exchange, and that certainly is an ethos that runs strongly through the company. A second point I would say is that we have two major asset streams, which are fairly stable in agriculture and forestry, coming into production. And the third one is that we are moving from a jam tomorrow company into one that's will be start producing revenues and start monetizing its assets via inward investment, as we've seen and illustrated over the past 6 months. So I feel there's a good momentum with us, and we're in the right spaces.
Yeah, and I should add, maybe just looking at your shareholder page there, you do hold a few shares there. So I mean, you know, your interest is aligned with the shareholders. Is that the case?
Yeah, the board holds 39.4% of the shares outstanding. So certainly we are all aligned with that of shareholders, and we see the value that can be unlocked here.
Yeah, well, you know, as an investor myself, that's one of the things I always look for, you know, and I think, you know, if the board aren't putting their money in, then they probably have no confidence in the company themselves. But I mean, this is not the case here, like you said, just under 40% of shares owned by the directors there. Miles, thanks for talking to me, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks so much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a Friday. That means I have with me the lady, the Duchess of the Chart, the lady of the technicals, and the Fibonacci's and everything, Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick.
Hello. Yes, very good. Thank you.
All right. So let's. What do you think at the moment? The market is taking a bit of a tanking because the Deutsche Bank thing is rolling over, and people are saying this is a big thing. This could be a massive thing, you know. And the fine now the Department of Justice have imposed, like I say, it's almost as much as the bank is worth because they've fallen. The share price has fallen by 53%, a bit more than that now, almost 60%, I think, in the start of the year. So what do you think, Nick? What's your take on that?
Well, like, the fine should be big. Those people mis-selling mortgages crashed the economy. Hello? Finally, after all these years, somebody's getting fined and all of a sudden we're going to crash again. But anyway, that's just my political view. I think on the chart that Deutsche Bank has not bottomed yet. This low today is not the low. My Fibonacci things say that we're going to go to somewhere between probably 9.35 to sort of 9.4. But today is the last day of the month. Yeah. And it's a German bank holiday on Monday. And literally hedge funds have been short Deutsche Bank for 2 years.
Is it a German bank holiday? Is it German bank holiday?
Yeah, it's a new one. It's called German Unity Day to celebrate when they joined up with the East.
Oh, it's maybe a long holiday for Deutsche Bank.
I know. So imagine, right? Like, everybody's talking about Deutsche Bank. It's a hot thing. You've been short for 2 years. You've made a lot of money. It's the last day of the month, so that's when they, book to market. So it might. I think we're at risk of a really good profit-taking bounce, and perhaps they'll take profit. Some funds will take profit here, just because, you know, the more the talk comes, the more the risk that the German government or someone will come out and say something to calm the market, yeah, and trigger a squeeze rally. So I think that's why we're seeing a bounce today, and quite right. But I don't think it's buyers stepping in, you know, because it's too far gone. But I'm not sure that it's the low yet. Okay. So, but if it got to 9.35, 9.4, like, that's an epic place to buy. It really is. I don't see Deutsche Bank going below 7.9 unless they actually shut down the bank. So,
ooh, all right. Okay, and that will have massive implications on the rest of the economies and stocks anyway, banking stocks.
Deutsche Bank and JP Morgan, between the two of them, have the largest derivatives book of any bank ever. You know, they make Lehman look like a minnow. And so they will get bailed out, not because they think Deutsche Bank is worth saving, but because everybody is connected by these derivatives. It's so not, they're bailing out the counterparties.
Yeah, it's not because Deutsche Bank's worth saving, it's because the banking sector is worth saving. That's essentially why, isn't
it? If you bring down Deutsche Bank, you bring down the whole
house
lot,
of cards. Yeah. Okay, let's go with the requests we've had today. First one up, I think we did this last week, but it's sneaked in again. Seeing Machines, they've announced a little RNS today, which are distributors in Thailand and New Zealand. C is a ticker. What do you reckon on C?
We did do it last week, and I still like it, but like the high this week at 6.22 is the 50% retracement of the entire decline from 2013. So it is a natural kind of stalling point, but I do think that this continues to go higher. It's got major support at 5.34. That's the trend support, and the 200 weekly moving average at 4.3. Either one of those is really great levels to buy. I've marked them on the chart. I think we'll just see some sideways trading and some stalling here because we are very overbought, but I think it continues higher, and 5.34 is the level to keep your eye on.
Okay, next one is Sinclair Ice Pharma. SPH, had someone contact me saying, where's the bottom of these? I've been invested in these. Now, I like the turnaround they're doing, but they're gradually grinding lower and lower. So SPH.
It is. SPH, but we double bottomed this week. Potentially it's got the chance to go higher, but it's only confirmed as a double bottom if you draw a double bottom as a W, you have to take out the peak in the middle to confirm it's going higher. So the peak in the middle for this one is 28.53, and we've stalled just below that again this morning. If we can get above 28.53 and close above, I think that we'll go all the way back to the 200-day and the Fibonacci support, which is 33, 34 next, and potentially much higher. But that's really the key, you know.
Put
a price alarm on it at 28.50 or something, maybe 28.70, and if it goes there, take a look, because I think it could keep going.
Yeah. Well, I did say it looks like it's forming a little bottom here. Maybe it's too early to see.
It is definitely trying to, but that's what we need to see to confirm it.
Okay. And the next one is Capita. I had a trading warning yesterday. FTSE 100 company. CPI is the ticker. It was down like 26% yesterday. Is it down again today? I think it's down again today, but another 6% or something. But this is a stock that I would potentially look to buy into for my experiment, because it pays a nice dividend, and this has been massively, you know, sold down now. But yet, where's the bottom? And I don't think we've seen a bottom yet. We are still trading. I mean, we are on a down day today as well, which takes it lower probably. But where do you reckon, Nick, on the chart?
A down day today, and it's the end of the month. And look, we're going to close below the monthly 200 moving average if we close down here. So this is another stock, you know. we might see, I don't believe people are short. If it doesn't bounce into month end, people aren't shorting it. It's just falling out of the sky. And so that's not so good. If you know, we're not going to see it, I don't know that we'll see the same profit taking bounce in this stock. But if you put a weekly chart on and zoom out, or a monthly chart and zoom out, there's that really good set of lows at 6.10. And that is also the 61.8 Fibonacci retracement from the 2002 low. That's a really big deal level. I do think that we have potential for a really good bounce from there, but wait for it to get there and stabilize, and then it's a buy. The bounce from there should take us back to sort of 890 and potentially back to sort of 1050, but yeah, I mean, it will be a good one.
Do you know what's interesting? If you put on a monthly there and look at the RSI, it's never been this oversold, and that to me is like a reason to be interested, because you think this is super oversold. It's hitting like 30 on the RSI on a monthly, and it's never been down there before, and I'm just thinking, wow. So I mean, if you go back to weekly, it waits to that almost on the RSI. Sometimes I look for a double bottom on the RSI, you know, and the convergence of the MACDs there on a weekly, and you think that's a nice place to start looking or fishing maybe. But
6.10, I would make put a price alarm at 6.10. That's I know that's another 50 lower from here, but I think it's a really interesting level to get involved.
Oh, look at the price at the moment. It's 666, the number of the beast.
I remember when the S&P was there and people would shut up about it.
All right, next one suggested is ASA, ticker ASA, resources there. So what are you seeing? ASA!
Yeah, what a ripper this has been on.
It's a ripper, mate.
Yeah, really nice. So you have to use your Fibonacci projections to get here. They say that this is really good. The trend support is really good at 1.95. And this should continue. Like, it's 2.26 is an intermediate level. Mm-hmm. But it has the potential to keep going to 2.49 next. Yeah. But we could come all the way back. So I would, if you're not long, you can't buy it here. You just look at the RSI on that one as well. Yeah. If it comes back to 1.95, it should be really good for a bounce.
All right. Okay. And the last one, Mrs. That's Management Resource Solutions, MRS. What do you think, Mrs.?
Yeah, I don't want to...
Fun?
No, I'm not really a fan. It's just got rejected at the daily 200 moving average. I really like it. If you draw a trend line from the 2015, sort of August 2015 low, and use some magic Fibonacci projections, I think we're going to come back to about 9.95, 9.9. And I think it's a good buy there.
Wow, do you know what? They just announced a deal today that was people have been waiting for, which is the asset acquiring of Sub-Zero. And I've been sitting on the sidelines looking at this stock, thinking, should I get in yet? And for some reason, I haven't. I've just seen, you know, I saw this bit of weakness there, like I said, on the chart. And if you draw, like I said, a trend line down, you can see it's bouncing off that. And I'm thinking, I'm going to wait till it comes to at least 12, you know. And you know, fundamentally, this company should be looking good going forward, but almost like... people are waiting for this, and sometimes that happens. People are waiting for the announcement,
and
it comes.
And then the announcement comes, and it's not as good as everyone thinks, or they take profit on it, or they look to take profit on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Like, I don't like how the moving averages are. I don't like that we've failed at the 200-day moving average. So where would I be wrong about it continuing lower? Well, a daily close back above 13.03 would be a bottom, and that's back above the 200-day. So if it does that, I'm wrong, and it is going to keep going higher. But for now, I think we need to look lower.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I've drawn two just trend lines, you know, one from the low and the highs. And the low one just does finish around about the channel, about 12. So, I think we'll see. But we'll see what happens there. But like you said, the RSI is going down. MACD is converging there.
If you do simple things, okay, so the decline, you know, the decline from the middle of August to to the start of September, we've reversed at exactly the 50%. That's normally a bearish sign if you do that at the 50%.
Yeah.
And then today, like, we try, we had a 2 days ago, we had a couple of bullish candles. We tried to get above the 200 day and we just didn't. Like, today we've collapsed. Now, it might be end of month nonsense. And it, if I'm wrong, it'll get back above 13.
Yes, okay. End of month nonsense. I like that. So I've been sitting there, though, literally, with my finger over the buy button, thinking, all right, I'm quite busted. But there we are. All right, Nicola, thank you very much. And send me the charts.
The charts coming.
Yes, and I'll put them on so you can listen to the podcast, look at the charts, as annotated by the fair hand of Nicola Duke. Thanks, Nick. Speak next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at five, EVR Holdings, EVRH, of course, virtual reality. And they had a bit of weakness in the share price, but jumped back on it. And I got to admit, I did buy a few more there. I own stock in this company, and I couldn't buy any. I tried to buy, and I about the 10th attempt, I managed to top up a little bit. Also, on the top five here, new entry, Redhawk Group, RHL. They've been seeing a lot of positive things about those on social media. At three, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG. At two, new entry for StratEro. That's ticker AERO, of course. And number one, brand new. It's not been in the top five before. And I've seen a lot of chatter about this, about their resource, their asset base size. And they have interest, of course, in Brockham, I think, and Horse Hill there. So it's Alba Minerals, ALBA. Worth checking out, doing some research on. And the first step to that is putting them on your watch list, of course, to get RNSs straight to the front screen of your phone whenever they release them. But worth doing a bit of research on that company. By the way, you can see the top five most followed companies over the last 7 days on the website at the blog there. And today's most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website this morning was from Seeing Machines. We covered them with Nicola on the chart there, and earlier on with Zach, actually. Again, you know, a lot of good chatter about this company. And the RNS was about their strategic distributors being appointed for Asia Pacific in Thailand and New Zealand there. All right, today's suggested one for your watch list is Frontier Developments, FDEV. Suggested by Paul. Thank you for getting involved, Paul. And by the way, if you know of a company you think people should add to their watch list, by all means, go to the blog, click the link there, fill out the form, and it'll be on the podcast. All right, what does the company do? A leading developer of video games based in Cambridge. How many shares do they have in issue? 34 million. What's current price and market cap? 68 million market cap, and 200 pennies, or £2, is the share price. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? Its full year results for the year ended 31st of May 2016. Revenue was 21.4 million, operating profit of 1.2 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Net cash balance 8.6 million. There's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, trading since the year end in what was essentially a quiet quarter for the group has exceeded the board's expectations. The board expects sales of Elite Dangerous, I assume that's a game, to continue to build over the rest of the financial year as new players are recruited and adoption of Elite Dangerous Horizons continues. Reason two, the results for the full year will primarily be driven by the successful launch of Planet Coaster in November and trading over the holiday period. The encouraging performance of Planet Coaster pre-orders and the positive reception of the alpha build give the board confidence of successful launch. And reason three, the board is excited about the growth opportunities ahead in the coming years as existing franchises continue to be strengthened and new franchises are developed. The company was notified on the 9th of September that Rockspring, a company owned by David Gammon, the chairman of the company, and his family purchased 15,700 shares in the company at $185 per share, and also 14,300 shares at $188 per share. So that's Frontier Developments. That's ticker FDEV. And Paul reckons you should add that to your watch list. All right, so do some research there. Thank you very much for listening. Muchos. Apreciados. Have a nice weekend, by the way.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.